Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. I have with me today Christy Carl, and she's very dear to me. I met her, I don't even know when, so long ago, and I had the privilege of accompanying her through her master path and also witnessed her path with cancer, a condition that she and I both share now. And I felt like her story was inspiring for a lot of different reasons. And she's just very much touched my heart all these years. So I'm really happy to have you, Christy, on the show today. And please, welcome.
Thank you so much, Phyllis. It's my pleasure to be here with you because you have touched my heart in that same way through all these years.
Great. Good. A mutual touching heart society. Great. So I love hearing Reiki stories. And of course, this is what I like starting out with. So how did you come to Reiki? And you live in Portland. Were you living in Portland then and so on?
Okay. So thinking back to the beginning, it was in 1980. And I was actually living in Salem, Oregon, and attending the Little Unity Church there.
Uh-huh.
And they would bring different speakers and teachers in. And one of the people who was brought in 1980 was Mrs. Takata to teach first-degree Reiki. And there were many, many, many of us who took that first degree class with her. There was, 20 or 30 people in the class. And so that was the beginning for me, was with your grandmother, Mrs. Takata. And I did the first degree class. And the part that struck me so deeply was that I had been playing around with energy work. And because I'm an RN, a nurse, I was learning some different kinds of energy work that, quote, nurses would do, and right. I couldn't do them. I couldn't make it work. You know, I kept knowing it could work, and I kept thinking this is a really neat thing, but they all took too much brain power or concentration or something. And what I remember was after being initiated, it was absolutely what Mrs. Takata said, which was, hands on, Reiki on, hands off, Reiki off.
Right.
And it was like, oh my gosh, this works. And so that was very delightful to me. And it also felt very congruent with the spiritual path I was on.
Uh-huh.
Because at least in that setting, what I remember is Mrs. Takata saying, this is just God. You know, God's everywhere and God can heal and here's God. And this is just one way of accessing God. And so for me, it's always felt like that, that I am accessing this universal life force that's the great mystery and the big, you know, just so much bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that was really important to me was hearing that with Reiki, I was a channel. Now, for a few years there, we didn't talk about being Reiki channels because channels were new age woo-woo things, you know, calling in all sorts of beings and entities.
Right.
But nonetheless, I think it's a very good word for the experience of just being the intermediary.
Right.
And for me, coming from this background of being a nurse and being taught to take care of everyone, and having a very strong inclination to take on other people's stuff, it was very important to me at that point in my development to hear that, no, I wasn't responsible for other people's healing. I was simply the channel, and that I didn't need to get involved in their issues. I didn't need to know what was going on. I could just be there and be a presence of healing.
Uh-huh.
So that was a significant issue at the time. In the Unity Church, we had some visitors too. We had Well, her name was Patricia Bowling at the time, but Patricia and James Ewing. And Patricia was doing her her master's initiation and training with Mrs. Takata.
Right.
And so she was a part of that first degree class and was the assistant. And then she stayed and somewhere in there got initiated because then she was offering second degree.
Right.
And Patricia was a lovely proponent of Reiki and, you know, encouraged everyone and was so sweet and supportive of that. And interestingly, her husband, James, although they weren't husband and wife at the time, was teaching an inner guidance class.
Right.
And that goes back, that takes me back to the beginning of my cancer story, but we'll go back to that in a moment. So with Reiki, I did the second degree class with Patricia not long after my first degree, and I honestly don't remember how long it was, you know, 6 months or 8 months or something. And in that particular case, when I had my initiation, I felt myself go out to the stars, connect with something, and come back.
Wow.
And it all happened in a split second, but it was extraordinary. During my first degree initiations, I didn't feel anything. You know, I just stood there and did them. But my second degree initiation was this extremely important kind of shift, and I couldn't explain it. I just knew that I'd had an energetic shift with it.
Right.
So that was impressive. Impressed me, I think is the right way of saying it. And so then Patricia was a wonderful mentor and mentored me through lots of Reiki, and we had a group of people who practiced Reiki together. I had friends who would, we would do lots of Reiki exchanges. I started doing some private clients then, and for a few years had people come to my home or I would go to their home. One of the things I learned was that I could not just leave my hands on people until they stopped drawing, because one of my very first clients drew energy for 4 or 5 hours.
Right.
I was like, this isn't going to work. I've got to put some boundaries on this. So I, you know, I learned to work with the energy and move it and yet put it some containment on how much time I could allow for any one treatment. So there was those years in there where I simply practiced Reiki. And I did not get involved with any, you know, that was, Mrs. Takata died shortly after my first degree initiation, I think 3 months later, actually. Because I think I got initiated in October and she died in December. And so there was all that change for you, all that change for the Reiki organization. And, you know, some discord and conflict perhaps between people. I don't know because I didn't participate.
Right.
I felt like I'd been given this sacred gift and I just needed to practice. So that's what I did. And it was very wonderful because it became my personal experience and wasn't part of a collective movement.
Right.
It was mine.
Right.
So in trying to think what year it would have been, 1992 or so, I began to feel that it was time for me to do the master's initiation. And this is again where decision making for me after taking the inner guidance classes with James had become this very inner experience for me. So I would go into meditation and ask specific questions about this or that. And with the master's initiation, it was that. It was going deep inside of myself to what I now consider my soul, my higher self, and asking, was this the right time? And getting a yes, I then started searching for who was the master that I would feel connected to do the initiation. And I actually met a woman in Hawaii, because I was in Hawaii, and I thought, well, maybe it's Hawaii, because Mrs. Takata was from
right,
Hawaii.
Right, right.
But when I met her, there just wasn't the connection or the depth that I was, you know, felt right about. And then there was some conversations with some Reiki masters in Portland, and that didn't seem right. And then you were coming to Brighton Bush to one of the local Reiki gatherings.
Right.
And so I thought, well, it's time to go meet Phyllis and see if this is the right place. And that Reiki gathering was probably one of the few times that I had actually done any kind of group Reiki gathering kind of thing. And I liked it, but I had a clear intention of it was about meeting you.
Right.
And so we did meet. And for me, it was an immediate yes inside of myself that, yes, this is who I want. And we did a Reiki. We did some connecting or doing some Reiki together or something for a few times. And then you were having the Reiki Masters exploration class, I would call it, up in Canada, and invited me to come up
right.
there. And in that setting, one of the things I remember that was so fun for me was that you were, you know, in the process of helping people decide whether they wanted to proceed with the initiation or not. And I really appreciated that thoughtfulness to that process. But the fun part was that in that process, you did, you taught a first degree class, so to speak. And I don't know if you had students, but you were reviewing all the hand positions. You were
right.
reviewing how the class went. You were reviewing the history, blah, 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 all of those things. It was exactly how I did it and knew it and remembered it.
Wow.
And it was like, oh, this is so wonderful. Because there were so many people in those, during those times, during those years in between when Mrs. Takata left and,
mm-hmm.
and that, 1993-ish, I think it was. That had shifted and changed and moved with Reiki. So you were kind of calling it all back in and saying, look, this is the basis. This is how it works. And it was exactly how I was practicing. There was not a thing, not one thing that was different. And it was just this wonderful affirmation for me of my practice and,
uh-huh.
and how much Reiki was a part of me, was me, is me, in me, that it wasn't something that I had simply learned the outer parts of. You know,
right.
I had just taken it in and absorbed it. So at that, yeah, I think that was probably 1993 and then I was clear I wanted to be initiated, and I wanted to be initiated on the fall equinox. And you happened to be in New Mexico. So I flew down to New Mexico so we could do the initiation. And interestingly enough, through that process, I didn't ever get any training until a year later when you
Right.
were back up here. And so I was initiated as a master, but wasn't doing any outward practice for an entire year. And I liked that a lot. It felt like the energy was settling into me, and I was taking it on in the inner way that felt appropriate and responsible
uh-huh.
for me.
Uh-huh.
So that then when I did the training part, so to speak, with you in a class in 1994, I felt really ready for it.
Uh-huh.
I could take the more, what I considered the more mental parts in, because I had settled into the energy part. An interesting side note to that is that the week that I was coming up to the training, one of the islands, maybe would be, but I'm not sure, one of the Puget Sound Islands, I became pregnant with my son. And I know the exact day I became pregnant with him because I actually had an energy experience of him coming in from the stars. And I was actually nauseated the very next morning and continued to be nauseated for the next 6 months. But, and I don't, you know, I don't know what connection that has, but it helps me identify all the points in time.
Right.
Because
right.
of that.
Right.
So the Reiki part of my life with the master's initiation shifted some in terms of I was then doing a few Reiki classes. I was just hesitating about that because it's not real clear to me, you know, if I started that right away or not. And I'm guessing probably not because I was pregnant and then had a baby.
Right.
And then had cancer.
Right.
But I do remember doing some Reiki classes, early on with some people, when Christopher was little. And then, you know, then it starts becoming intertwined very much with my cancer story because when I was diagnosed with cancer, one of the very first things I did was call on one of the Reiki masters here in Portland and went to see her. And she was very helpful. She said to me very clearly, you need Reiki. You need Reiki every day. No, not just for a month or a week, or you may need Reiki every day for a really long time. So let's get going and let's figure that out. The other thing she said to me, because she knew my husband at the time, was, and you also need to get that divorce taken care of. Because
oh, wow.
I was separated from Christopher's dad. But not divorced. And so at that point in time, the Reiki community just came together for me. Well, now I know I can remember that I did have students because what we agreed was that I would call my second degree students and we would call Reiki masters and we would ask them to come and do Reiki on me.
Uh-huh.
And so we set up this care team where I had, someone come and give me Reiki at my house every day. And that was at the very beginning when I was first diagnosed and I was still deciding what kind of treatment path I
right.
might take, but I knew that there was no question that we would have Reiki as part of it. And several of the local Reiki masters came, several of my students came, you know, I was getting wonderful, making these wonderful connections. And one of the key people was Faye Gilman,
yes.
who lived close to me at the time. And she was the holder of any day that anybody else couldn't come. She was there. And that was so precious to me. And it was this amazing experience of receiving.
Uh-huh.
Of allowing myself to receive and just lay there. I have a very clear impression as we're talking of the room I had the treatments in and being on the table and people coming in and someone else taking care of my baby so that I could have these treatments. And in that one or two of those treatments, Mrs. Takata's spirit came through very clearly to me. And I remember asking her in that place of receiving Reiki, you know, what do I need to do or something like that. And her response was, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. You're doing well. Just keep on keeping on. And that was just, it was just the first time I'd ever connected with her spirit in that way.
Uh-huh.
So that was really wonderful. And, I can remember Faye was having connections with Asui's spirit coming through and kind of helping her. And Faye was doing research into what were the, you know, the treatments that might be recommended for cancer, you know, in the past, what had been done. And we found some words out of some piece of writing, of what Mrs. Takata had suggested in terms of hand positions and all of these kinds of things. So we were just really working with it. And during those times, I also had amazing connections with other spirit beings. So there was some way that there was this spiritual opening that was happening for me too. And then there was the time when Bonnie, and I don't remember Bonnie's last name.
Bonnie Barker.
Yes. Who came, Bonnie just came and stayed with me.
Right.
She just came and said, I'll just come and take care of you. So she just moved in and basically took care of Christopher for me so that I could do my macrobiotic cooking and I could do my meditations and I could do my Reiki treatments, although she was also, of course, you know, a driver and a support person and could give me Reiki. And it was this wonderful experience of the community coming around me, even though I hadn't been much a part of the community prior to that. So that was a wonderful piece. And then I think that the other really significant part of my Reiki story in terms of that time was that I did continue to either give myself Reiki or have a Reiki treatment almost every day through the next 7 years, because it took me 7 years to get from being diagnosed with cancer to being completely cancer-free. And I did not initially do any medical treatments. So that was in, I was diagnosed in 1996, and my son was a year old at the time. And from 1996 to 1999, I just always went in every day and asked what I was supposed to do. And I was guided to do a variety of things, but it was never during that time until 99, it was never traditional medical treatments, because I had some pretty awful experiences with a couple of oncologists who were simply unable to accept that any kind of healing could happen other than what they were recommending. So one of the pieces that happened during that time, and then we'll have to somehow segue into the cancer story, but was when I was doing some medical treatments in 1999 and 2000, I had, I was having some radiation treatments, and I was also using an experimental drug to help mitigate and prevent any damage to my tissue from the radiation, from my healthy tissue. And I had an allergic reaction to that drug. So I had a full-blown anaphylactic reaction with hives from head to toe and couldn't breathe and, you know, being put on epinephrine and Benadryl and oxygen and all of that stuff. And interestingly enough, when I was laying in bed, you came to town.
Yes.
While I was suffering from that, and Faye brought you out to see me, and you and my husband Ron, because I had initiated my husband Ron, he wasn't my husband then, but he was my partner at that time. I had initiated him a few months before so that he could give me Reiki treatments. And so you and Ron gave me a treatment that day, and we were talking about my situation, which was that during these radiation treatments, I was having these horrible side effects from it. Now I wouldn't be able to use this medication any longer to protect me. And you said, well, what if you had your second degree students and any Reiki masters who are willing to do this send you distance Reiki during your radiation treatments? And when I did that, It was just this amazing experience for me that I could feel as I would go, because Faye would often drive me to the treatments, and you just undress, go in and get zapped by these right. bazillions of radiation ions, and then you're done. And they would claim that it wouldn't have any effect, but I would just be wiped out by them. I was right. sick, and
right.
you know, we were protecting my skin, and Faye was giving me Reiki as soon as I got done. But you know, and I was using that medication. Nonetheless, they were awful. They were awful for me. That completely changed when I started getting the distance healing during the radiation treatments.
Cool.
I could feel the energy, the Reiki energy come around me and protect me. I could go in and out of the radiation treatments and not be affected by them. And my experience was kind of funny. I went, holy smokes, distance works. Because I've been doing distance healings on people for years, but you often don't get any feedback.
Right.
And I don't know that I had ever consciously known that someone was doing distance healings on me before. And part of it, of course, was there was this whole cadre of people. You know, I don't really know. Faye set it up mostly for me, but there was probably 10 or 12 people doing Reiki during this precise time and beaming it towards me. And it became such that I could tell when people had forgotten. If two or three people had forgotten, the energy was different.
Yes, I agree.
And so I would call Faye and say, okay, we got to remind everybody I'm still having these, you know, this radiation treatment and I still need help. And then the next day I would feel it, you know, okay, all right, we got everybody back. So that was a deep learning for me about Reiki and the power of it. And the power of the distance work
right.
and
mm-hmm.
how that could be significant to me.
Great. Wonderful.
And, you know, from there on, I've done a few classes for people after I got through my cancer stuff. I have continued. I put myself to sleep every night with Reiki, you know, not a complete treatment, but somewhere on my body. That's how I put myself to sleep.
Right.
When I went through the whole menopause thing and I'd wake up in the middle of the night with a hot flash, that's how I would put myself back to sleep. When I did, some chemo, Ron, my husband, came along with me every day, and he would give me a Reiki treatment as the medication was going in.
Right.
So it was significant that way as well. And now in my healing practice, out of my cancer came some understandings and some abilities to use my meditation and inner guidance work in a way that I could facilitate healing in myself. And I then started practicing those methods, so to speak, with clients. And I combine it with Reiki now. So I always put my hands on people. Generally speaking, I'm using it as a collaborative experience, meaning that I use my Reiki collaboratively with my inner guidance meditation work. And when my hands are on people, usually I'm not doing all of the hand positions, unless someone comes in and they're just deeply tired or deeply unable to do emotional, spiritual healing work at the time in a conscious way. I will give them a Reiki treatment and, let them just take it in without any, pressure, so to speak, to do their emotional work. Because
uh-huh.
sometimes it's more than people can handle. And I still have, one of my very first students, who's second degree now, I will give her a Reiki treatment, you know, a couple of times a month. And And because she can connect with the energy so well, it's this amazing collaboration just between the two of us,
right,
in silence.
Right.
But now I feel like with my hands on people, what I'm doing is, you know, I will ask them to intentionally pull that Reiki energy in. And that has been an interesting addition to my practice. Rather than just putting my hands on, Reiki on, hands on, Reiki on, hands off, Reiki off, when I put my hands on, I have found that if I say to people, this is what I'm doing, I'm pulling this universal life force in through me, it's not my energy, take as much as you can, intentionally pull it in, it shifts it dramatically. People can pull that energy in intentionally, and I just feel it rushing through at a much higher rate than it would if they weren't paying attention, so to speak.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Yeah, so that's very interesting to me.
Uh-huh.
It is.
Great.
And, you know, and some people are, of course, really able to do that more, and other people do it some, but I always feel a shift when they make a conscious statement intentionally inside themselves that I want this to come in.
Uh-huh. Great. Good. Well, I was just kind of struck by your comment about people maybe not being ready to do emotional work. And I remember that when I visited you that day and gave you a Reiki treatment, you were telling me about another kind of emotional clearing work that you were going to start, and my impression was, in keeping track of you and all the things that you were doing in your cancer care, is that many times you would get that you needed to work on a certain part of your life or a certain, I don't know if that's really the right words, but you always seem to find exactly the right kind of therapeutic processing to work on that, and you would just go for it. And I was really impressed by that. And also just your very, well, the only word that I know is holistic way that you approached your treatment. Like, it wasn't just, okay, I'm going to do Reiki, but you changed your diet. I don't believe you were macrobiotic before you had cancer, but you certainly went into it wholeheartedly, so to speak, and did all of this emotional work and a lot of Reiki, and then eventually you participated in some allopathic medicine kinds of treatments. And I always just had this feeling of balance with you, with your treatments, and they weren't about... The thing that I was also impressed about was it never seemed like it was out of fear, but out of right timing somehow. And is that a true impression, or did I make this up?
I think that's a true.
Well, you know, I'm totally human.
It is accurate, Phyllis. And where it, the basis of it is what I call my inner guidance practice.
Uh-huh.
And that's a term that people interpret in different ways. And so it may take some explanation. And I sometimes have a hard time explaining exactly what it is. But what I learned from Patricia's husband, James, was the beginning of that.
Uh-huh.
And it is a process where I go into meditation, and the meditation steps are to become more and more and more deeply embedded into my subconscious and my soul, and letting go of my personality and my conscious experience of
uh-huh.
the world.
Uh-huh.
So it is certainly a deep meditation, and there's lots of techniques that I was initially taught, and then I've added some over the years. But the important part is that I learned to go into this very deep, what I call shifted place, like a trance state, so to speak. And it's similar to almost being self-hypnotized. but it's also very much connecting with spirit, connecting with, again, what I call God. And so for years, when I had my cancer, I would say, I go into meditation and I would say, okay, I'm yours, God. I'm yours. Show me what to do. Tell me what to do. Show me the way and I'll follow it. Because I sincerely experienced that cancer and everything in life, but significant illness is an opportunity to go deep into spirit and to explore things. And on another level, in that exploration, to heal whatever I might have come to heal in my psyche and myself in this lifetime. And I also wanted to get all the juice out of it that I could. It was like, okay, if I'm having this experience, I want to make it the most fruitful, the most powerful and useful experience I possibly can. So I tied those two things together, and it's true, when I'm in that deep meditative place, there is no fear. Absolutely uh-huh. no fear. And there is also no attachment to what I'm being asked or given or shown that could be my next step. And it is one of the ways that I'm actually able to identify if I'm deep enough, is I have no reaction to whatever comes. I don't have an attachment to it. I don't have a sense of, oh my God, I don't want to do that, or oh dear, I wonder what that would be like. It's just simply not there. It's just this deep, deep knowing, okay, if that's what I'm being shown, then that's the right thing to do. And so it's very much a step-by-step process. And I do feel like my cancer healing journey was specifically mine. It was not anybody else's. So I can't really say to people, because they often ask me, you know, how did you heal your cancer? I want to heal my cancer. So how do I heal mine? And my answer has become, you know, I did lots of different things that might be helpful to you, but the only thing I know that really works is to go deep inside and find out what it is that's calling, you know, what is it that your soul is looking for. Now, along with that, I do have some opinions. And my opinion is that most deep, big, huge, physical ailments and dysfunctions are not just physical, right. That they are holistic, that they are a reflection of what our soul came to learn. They're a reflection of our emotional angst and issues that we, you know, gathered along the way as children, and that they do offer an opportunity to, one, work with those emotional issues and clear them as much as can be done in, you know, any amount of time. And that by clearing the emotional issues, oftentimes our body can heal much more easily. I also have an opinion that it is a soul's journey. It is a spiritual journey. And so for people to be able to get out of their heads about what their illness is about and what they should do, and even get out of their emotional issues, and make some connection with, you know, the great mystery, spirit, God, whatever they might have, can be very helpful, can be very much a part of their healing process. And for me, the emotional issues, you know, I kept getting clues from lots of different places. You mentioned the macrobiotics. I do feel like cancer, like many illnesses, is multifactorial, meaning that I had to take care of my body. I had to take care of emotions. I had to take care of, you know, my intellect, and I had to take care of my spirit, all of those things. And so I viewed macrobiotics as a way of taking care of my body, giving my body the tools it needed to heal. And so eating really well was a shift. But part of why I resonated with it is that the macrobiotic process, or the macrobiotic philosophy, is embedded in energy work.
Right.
It's all about balancing yin and yang. And within that, and then that's just embedded in this whole spiritual philosophy of you know, kind of a Buddhist, Taoist background. So when I fell into macrobiotics, it was completely resonant for me with my Reiki practice.
Right.
And completely resonant for me with my spiritual practice. And a lot of the reason it felt so good to me is that it was about feeling the energy of the food and honoring the food and being respectful of the food as not just the earth giving to us in a physical way, but the earth giving to us in an energetic and spiritual way. So that was very cool. And it was my macrobiotic counselor, David Briscoe, who said to me when my cancer was not going away with the macrobiotic approach, he said to me, you know, he said, you're eating perfectly. And if food was going to cure your cancer, it would have been by now, because I've seen that happen. He said, there's something else going on. And that prompted me to start looking more deeply, even though I had been looking at it. I read an article that he had suggested, and it was by a therapist who talked about the will to live and the wish to die, and that all people have an innate will to live because it's the life force coming up through us. And if we're not getting well, then perhaps there's some subconscious wish to die in some part of us. And when I read that, Phyllis, I went, oh, that's me. And I did not know what could have happened to me that would create a wish to die. But I started with clearer intention focused on what is it in me that would want to die? What happened to me that would create that wish to die inside of me? And it was during that process and looking at the emotional components of that I remembered that I had been sexually abused as a child by my family physician. And in that memory, it was a classic abuse memory in that it came viscerally. I started getting nauseated, then I got the dry heaves, then I started having flashback impressions, and it was awful. I mean, it was truly awful. And yet I also felt like I'd finally opened to something that could be worked with.
Yeah.
And so then I was working with a woman who's here in Portland who is a very intuitive energy healer. She's also a naturopath and an acupuncturist and a Chinese medicine practitioner and knows lots and lots of things, but mostly she is intuitive. And so I would go to her and I'd say, you know, here's what I'm working on. And it was this wonderful collaboration of having a partner, because she would do her work and I would do my inner work, and it was synergistic. And so she would have her impressions, I would have my impressions, and we'd shift the energy and start working with it. And there was endless issues. That I had to work with, and some of it was just so much wanting to leave. I wanted to leave. It was just too painful being here. And so we worked and worked and worked and worked with all of those. And then through that process, you know, I was also guided to do some Western medicine. And this is a really great part of the story, because when I was first diagnosed, they would have done surgery, radiation, and chemo.
Right.
And I refused all of those initially. I never had surgery. And I was finally guided to an oncologist who would listen to me. And he looked at me. This is it's like 3.5 years after my diagnosis. So I've not done any Western medicine treatments up to this point. And I tell him my story, and then he tells me his story. And he was actually guided to go into oncology, even though he came from a pretty alternative background. And he said, you know, if you have the kind of cancer I think you have, we should be able to get rid of that tumor now. But if you have the kind of cancer I think you have, you should be dead. So don't stop doing what you're doing because you've kept yourself alive. So what I was saying is that I had, I was guided to meet an oncologist who knew about a drug that was in clinical trials. And it was the first immunotherapy that was used. And he was willing to prescribe it for me. And by some miracle, the Oregon Health Plan, because I was indigent at the time, was willing to pay for it. And I was able to find an oncologist who would prescribe it here locally. And I used Herceptin. I used Western medicine to keep the cancer at bay while I continued to do my emotional work and could become a being who didn't create cancer anymore, you know, that didn't wish to die, uh-huh. that wanted to be here. Uh-huh. And there were, you know, when I tell the story in that way, it sounds like there weren't any mishaps. Well, there were mishaps because I, you know, at one point in time agreed to get a port put in my arm and was pushing to get it done. And I ended up with this huge infection because I didn't pay attention to and do my guidance over it. And I didn't slow down and take time. So it's like, okay, I learned a little bit about, you know, you have to take time to do these things and you have to be mindful of, not pushing and trying to go too fast.
Right.
And I am not convinced at this point that I needed to do the radiation. I don't quite know why I did it, other than this same oncologist suggested it. It was useless. My cancer came back. We stopped the Herceptin. We finished doing some chemo drugs that they gave along with it. And I did the radiation because he was saying, well, it's just energy. But I had significant, you know, even with the help of Reiki, I had significant side effects from the chemo and I had significant side effects from the radiation and my cancer came back. However, when it came back, I went into meditation and was told just to start the Herceptin again. And the oncologist agreed, okay, let's just try it. And I could palpate my tumor, so I always knew when it was there and not there. And so when I palpated the tumor and it was there and I freaked out and cried and had my fit and then went into meditation and say, what shall I do? It was start the Herceptin again. And I started the Herceptin again and the tumor dissolved in 2 weeks.
Wow.
So it was clear to me at that point that it was the Herceptin that was working. It was not the radiation. It wasn't the chemo. None of those made any difference, which was the good news for me because the Herceptin being immunotherapy had no side effects.
Right.
So I could go in every week and get a 30-minute infusion and go on with my life.
Right.
And that was really lovely. And a big part of going on with my life was continuing to do this emotional work. And I stayed on the Herceptin then for a couple of years and continued to work with this particular practitioner on my healing work and, you know, myself. And then one day I went into her and said, you know, I'm getting tired of this. Let's check in and see if it's time for the Herceptin to be done. And so we both went in, did our own processes. I opened my eyes and I look at her and she said, what'd you get? And I said, 30 days more. And she said, yeah, I got 1 month.
Wow.
And interestingly, we both knew that I was cancer free and the Herceptin really wasn't killing off cancer anymore. But somehow energetically, it was my friend and I needed to do another month worth of treatment. So I did, and then stopped it. And the reverberations from that, you know, I've had some side effects from the radiation that I have to kind of deal with and that I work with. You know, I give that area of my body more Reiki. I nurture it more. I clear the radiation out of it. I have had further flashbacks of the abuse, and at times when things get triggered, then I know I have more work to do around that. But I've come out of that process stronger, standing in myself, you know, much more able to stand in myself and say, this is who I am. And no, yes, I had all these patterns, and yes, I used to look like this, and yes, I would do this and I'd do that, but I don't want to do that with my life anymore. That's not what my life is about. And so my life is slower. My life is more focused on continuing to do lots of meditation. It's focused on continuing to do my healing work. It's focused on being out in nature a lot. All things that always nurtured me, but I always stayed really busy doing this or that out in the world too. Mm-hmm. So I have more balance. But I think more importantly is this notion of feeling like I'm myself, and that it's okay. Not only okay, I like being myself, and I like being strong. And if I have certain personality quirks, it's like, yep, that's who I am, instead of feeling ashamed of myself.
Right. Great. Well, it's just wonderful. Thank you for saying all that you have. Yeah, because I just feel as really connected to your process and to your story, and it's really difficult. I find my edge is really difficult to know when I'm not listening to myself and when I am. Because there is always, we used to call it peer pressure, but it's actually pressure from me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
About, am I doing enough?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I really love listening, and maybe this is why I really needed to interview you. I don't know. There are always ramifications about, you know, always ripples going out, not just for me, but to other listeners.
Yeah.
And I also had great fortune, and I tell people, if you don't connect with your oncologist, find another one.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I have an oncologist and I have a naturopathic oncologist, and the two of them are working together with me, and the medical oncologist is very open to what I'm doing with the naturopathic oncologist, and they've become colleagues now because of me, and she's very interested in what he's doing with me and seeing the results and so on. I went in one day, finding out that I had this metastasis, I think I finally got to him in like June or something after I got back from Europe. I said, you know, I just have this thing about all these supplements that I'm taking, and I just feel like they're really supporting my body to be healthy so that my body can recover from the condition of cancer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this feels really good. And I really would like to use my pendulum. And he said, well, I'm not very up on pendulums, and I don't know if I actually believe them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into his little storeroom, right, of medication. And he brought back about 30 bottles of I don't know what, right? And he said, okay, he sat down a group of them, and he said, okay, pendulize and tell me which ones you should take. So I did this with all of these bottles.
Yes.
Yeah, it was so cool. And I thought, oh my God, I hope that I'm not going to like end up taking, you know, needing to take some really strange thing. But it ended up that my pendulum found the thing that was, you know, resonant for me in each of the different groupings that he wanted me to do. But
yes,
a couple of them were different. And then when he looked at the combination that the pendulum had chosen, he got it. somehow. And he said it to me in medical terms, which went right over my head. But he was really surprised and very interested. And I feel really good about taking it. And then I did the dosages by my pendulum.
Yes.
And
I used to, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And that was really wonderful for me. I mean, I felt empowered by that. That I didn't feel mm-hmm. like, you know, I was going to him and knowing that, you know, these wouldn't have the kind of side effects that I might have if I were taking allopathic medicine. But it does have side effects. And I just wanted to be able to, you know, live my life as robustly as I could while still caring for myself. And mm-hmm. it's been really interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did a similar thing using muscle testing or, well, when it's easier when it's those little tiny bottles and specific, I would choose it by muscle testing. And yeah. I actually was setting my dose of my chemo and setting my dose of my Herceptin for the oncologist.
Wow.
He would walk in and he would say, okay, what are we doing today? I'd say, hang on just a minute. You have to be quiet and I'll close my eyes and do my guidance and see. And so he'd say, well, this is what I'm thinking about. And then I would go in and say, yeah, no, that's too much, or we'll do this or we'll do that. And it is. I mean, it's so wonderful to have someone who will collaborate with you and believes in you, because that's part of the healing process,
right.
is taking on accountability and responsibility for oneself and feeling empowered.
I agree. Totally.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. So I'm going to end this whole conversation with an interesting thing that we started out with that was not on the air. I asked Christy about, you know, telling her cancer story. And I said, well, you know, I don't know if I'm really being politically correct. And she said, well, you know, my friends, you said, well, all my, you know, some of my friends don't like for me to call it my cancer. And I call it my cancer because it's mine. And if I feel like if I don't own it, then I have no choice. It just has its own life. And then mm-hmm. I get to like run after it or, you know, run away from it. But I can't be with it if I don't really claim it for myself. This is my theory.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like it's been an ally for me. It's, I find that cancer or any condition of the body that erupts is really a messenger, and it's a messenger of healing. And whatever that is, we need to pay attention to it. And I feel like I've gotten I've been able to experience some amazing transformational processes within myself. Because
yes.
of that. And I
yes.
hear that that's true for you too.
That is completely true, Phyllis. Well said. It is a messenger, and it in a certain way is a gift, even though it's a difficult gift to deal with sometimes. It is. It's a messenger, and it's an opening. It's a portal to becoming something more, something different, something bigger, and even more well than we were before.
Well, absolutely. I agree. So, thank you very much for being on the show with me today and for sharing your stories and for being so articulate and for also being an example for me of using Reiki as a way to touch oneself. Like one of the things that I tell people who have cancer who want to use Reiki as a part of their healing process is that I say one of the things that I feel Reiki has done for me is it's guided me and allowed me to have insight into what's really right for me, what my body is asking for. And I did surgery right away. I did chemotherapy and radiation after some thought. And when I got to hormone therapy, I just said, forget it. And now that's what I'm doing for my metastasis, and it's at this point seems to be working really well. And it just wasn't the right time for me 4 years ago. And I thought at the beginning, well, I should have toughed it out and done the hormone therapy 4 years ago. And then I got to the point where I thought, but I wasn't ready to do this next step of healing that this metastasis has brought on. Not then. I couldn't have done it at all. I would have just been miserable. And I feel like there's some timing that's, we could call it God's timing or our own timing, that we don't get to, we can't hurry the river. We can't, you know, make things grow faster than they naturally grow. It's in our own timing. And that's something that's really difficult. To really trust timing. And I just get that your story is really about trusting this timing, because 7 years is a long time.
It is a long time, and I had no idea it was going to take that long or be that hard. But it is timing. It is, and I see that over and over again with my clients. It is, and it's making a decision now for what feels right and appropriate in this moment. And it's only in looking back that you start to see how the pattern was unfolding and how perfect it was.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Thank you very much, Christy.
Oh, Phyllis, thank you. What a gift for me to have this connection with you today.
Uh-huh. Great. Yeah. This is Phyllis Ferramoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.